This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose, and I'm continuing to read from Catherine S. White's Onward and Upward in the Garden. To this point, I haven't actually gotten to Catherine's writing because I've been using E.B. White, her husband's introduction. He so adored Catherine, and it was he who accomplished her dream of putting these pieces that appeared randomly in the New Yorker magazine between the covers of a book called Onward and Upward in the Garden. And this is the first chapter called A Romp in the Catalogs. For gardeners, this season of lists and callow hopefulness, hundreds of thousands of bewitched readers are poring over their catalogs, making lists for their seed and plant orders, dreaming their dreams. It is a season, too, when the amateur garden, like myself, marvels or grumbles at the achievements of the hybridizers and frets over the idiosyncrasies of the editors and writers who get up the catalogs. They are as individualistic, these editors and writers, as any Faulkner or Hemingway, and they can be just as frustrating or rewarding. They have an audience equal to the most popular novelists, and a handful of them are stylists of some note. Even the catalogs with which no one man can be associated seem to have personalities of their own. Before we examine the writers and editors, let's consider the hybridizers, the horticulturalists in general. Their slogan is not only bigger and better, but change, change for the sake of change, it seems. Say you have a nice flower like the zinnia, clean cut, of interesting, positive form, with formal petals that are so neatly and cunningly put together, and with colors so subtle yet clear that they always have been the delight of the still life artist. Then look at the W. Attlee Burpee catalog and the Joseph Harris Company catalog and see what the seedsmen are doing to zinnias. Burpee this year devotes its inside front cover to full-color pictures of the giant hybrid zinnias, which look exactly like great shaggy chrysanthemums. Now, I like chrysanthemums, but why should a zinnia be made to look like them? From Harris, you can buy the seed of what it calls the new super cactus-flowered zinnias, and they certainly do look like cactuses. Or you can buy the seed of fantasy zinnias, which are counterparts of asters, and both companies offer zinnias that look like dahlias. It is Spring, Texas, a nursery that grows only daylilies. Mr. Russell always makes it into one word, daylilies. His 1955 booklet, which recently fell into my hands, starts out with a personal note to his friends and customers, thanking them for their confidence and reporting on his health, which had been poor but was better. This was followed by a two-page argumentative, you might even say quarrelsome, essay headed Concerning Evergreen and Dormant Daylilies and Their Regional Behavior. Ours are hardy all over America. Here's why. Next comes a page of photographs showing four lily-growing Russells, and the biggest picture is of Mrs. H.M. Russell. Without her inspiration, writes Mr. R., there just wouldn't have been my contribution to the daylily world. Further on, amid the color pictures of the lilies, we are favored with a photograph of still another Russell, Skeeter, H.M.'s seventh grandchild, sitting behind his first birthday cake. Russell Gardens claims to be America's largest growers of daylilies, and there are 30 solid acres of them, a great part of which, Mr. Russell says, we consider strictly trash. I like this outspoken Texan. He may talk both big and small, but I find that I believe what he says. I hope he is in good health, and I advise any fancier to investigate his lilies. A stylist of another sort is nearer home, the Sage of White Flower Farm in Litchfield, Connecticut, who signs his writings Amos Pettingill. I have no idea whether Amos Pettingill is a real person. The name sounds like an ill-advised fabrication, but real or false, someone is in there pitching who edits a lively catalog and writes in a highly distinctive style. White Flower Farm is a nursery that specializes in rare plants, shrubs, trees, and bulbs. It also grows good quality everyday plants. Probably it is best known for Warmenhaven strain of Amaryllis. It's Clivia. It's Blackmore and Langdon tuberous-rooted begonias. It's Frise de Bois. It's 1958 plant book, 50 cents a copy. 37 pages is a model of clarity, good taste, and good order, an oddity in garden catalogs. It is entirely in black and white. Well, that is no longer true. The White Flower Farm now is gorgeous in color and quite beyond what she's describing. This catalog is really a dictionary of White Flower's goods. Everything offered is listed alphabetically under its botanical name and cross-indexed by its common name. Only the catalog addict will understand what a comfort so simple a thing as alphabetical order can be. Mr. Pettengill contributes a slightly testy introduction in which he takes off against the term green thumb and says that top grade has nothing to do with size. Two ideas I subscribe to, then gets down to business and with what's new. To enjoy Amos Pettengill's at his most peppery, though, you must read White Flower Farm Notes, which are bulletins issued at least six times a year and sent to White Flower's customers. Non-customers may subscribe. Here Amos really lets himself go. Chatty, sassy, or lyrical, as his mood dictates, he lets himself go. And here he airs his latest enthusiasms and his pet grouches. Bulbs, bulbs, bulbs. You will now, this was the June issue, please take your plant book in hand and do what you absolutely have no intention of doing. Order your bulbs for September, October delivery and elsewhere. Confound it, we do not think customers are always wrong. Most lady gardeners I know simply love him. I admire him for more explicit cultural directions, his odd bit of gardening lore, and his sensible descriptions of what he has to sell than for eccentric personality he has created for himself. I have found out what he says will happen to a plant, usually does happen to it. White Flower grows good plants, packages them well, and sends exact and detailed directions with every purchase. One of the new things it offers this spring, besides the white forsythia, is a lilac that blooms twice a year, and again is featuring Terra Rosa, unglazed flower pots, hand-turned in Italy. These range from the 8-inch diameter size for $5.95 to the 40-inch at $280, a nice little crock for the terrace. Another writer with a style of his own is Will Tilson, the grower and catalog writer for Will Tilson's Roses, Watsonville, California. The two catalogs I have, 1955 and 1956, were lent to me by a friend who runs a beauty parlor, and I must not keep them long. Although she has never bought a Tilson rose, she reads Tilson every night before she goes to sleep. Catalog readers, quite as much as catalog writers, are a group apart. The Tillison's catalogs are titled Roses of Yesterday and Today, for the good reason that Will Tillotson, though he does grow and sell any rare or modern roses he happens to admire, he specializes in old-fashioned roses. The catalogs are period pieces, too. The 1956 cover reproduces Sargent's The Lady with the Rose, and the 1955's is The Lady with the Swing from the Frick collection. I don't wonder that my friend finds fat little books good to look at and read. The many uncolored photographs of roses are enchanting, and I never tire of Mr. Tillotson's prose. He is a quoter. Bits of wisdom or poetry scattered through the 1956 book range from Yun Cheng Leng, a Chinese sage of the 16th century, to the romantic Leigh Hunt and Browning. The favorite source of Tillotson's wisdom, though, is Dean Hull's Book About Roses, published in England in 1869. He quotes again and again, "The catalogue's description of roses are informative and occasionally rhapsodic. If the date of a rose's origin is known, it is given." I happen to subscribe to that catalog, and I have bought old-fashioned roses from it. Well, I wish I could spend more time with her consideration of catalogs. She gives the writers a careful scrutiny as an editor. I'll close with her comment about the burpee writer. "The burpee people go for ruffles and anything. To me, a ruffled petunia is occasionally a delight, but a ruffled snapdragon is an abomination. The snapdragon is a very complicated flower to start with, and it has a style. Fuss it up and it becomes overdressed. Here is what burpee has done to snapdragons." And she quotes burpee. Well, I'm sure that many of you are receiving seed catalogs and looking at them and maybe buying seeds from them. I will conclude with Catherine's ending to this chapter. "O gentle reader, forgive me if you are sleepy or bored or annoyed. The tired catalog writer has emptied his sack of adjectives at your feet. These words reprinted from 1955, Roses of Yesterday, are used as Will Tillotson's sign-off in the new book. He is a writer gardeners will miss." And this is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose.